Welcome to the Forgettable Reads Podcast, a no-nonsense sleepcast for the rest of us. No creepy whispering, no bad spa music, no sleepy monotone. Just sincere reads of boring, bland material for all your verbal white noise needs. And now your host, Lauren Good.
Well, hello, my friends. It is so nice to be here with you again in a brand new season after a two-year hiatus. I know you cannot see me through these sound waves, but I'm sitting here. It's a nice, cozy March evening. I've got next to me burning one of my favorite candles I've ever had. It is rosewater and ivy. I had to turn to look. So this is episode 8, New Rituals for a New Normal. And this is a brand new season. We published our last episode, episode 7, Sleep School, You Are Enough, on May 26th of 2021. And in that episode, we explored a theme of transformation and looked at all the ways that we hide because of fear. I ended that last intro telling you all about a promise I had made myself over the course of the lockdown, which was that after I succeeded in losing 30 pounds physically, my next step was to get out there and start doing emotional push-ups to really focus on my emotional and social health. And folks, that's exactly where I have been and what I have been doing ever since then. The plot twist I wasn't quite prepared for, and I'm sure we'll talk a lot about in this season, is that it turns out they were pull-ups instead of push-ups, but I'm getting ahead of myself. So in spring of 2021, we went on hiatus, and many of you were kind enough to occasionally drop us a line and say that you were sad or confused or disappointed that we weren't releasing any new episodes. And I want to thank you for that. When I hear from you, then I know what we're doing is of great work. So I want to thank you for that. And I both, with this episode, want to offer you an apology and an update. I forget where I read this, but I mean, really, it doesn't matter. It's pretty much everywhere at this point. It's this theme of what the new normal looks like and feels like for most of us. The pandemic offered a whole new level of challenge, and so much changed in a relatively short period of time. Many of us had to re-examine what was important, how we wanted to move forward. How we wanted to move forward in the face of what our poor, belabored copywriters kept telling us in ad over ad over ad was unprecedented uncertainty. But before I get too deep into tonight's ramble, Alex, let's start with you. When we left off in spring of 2021, you were about to move to the city and start a new chapter. You want to give us an update on what that chapter looked like and give us a hint about what your new normal looks like now?
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, as you mentioned, I moved to Chicago a couple years ago with my girlfriend at the time. We were there for a couple of years. We actually got engaged while we were living there. So she is now my fiance, and we ended up actually, within the past couple of weeks, we actually moved back to our hometown, bought our first house together, and now we're living back in the suburbs. It was a good couple of years in the city, but you know, I think it was time for me to relax a little bit back in the suburbs.
Congrats, my friend. You deserve all the good things. Thanks for being here And thanks for sharing. So I'm not going to share everything that's happened over the last 2 years in tonight's episode, or we would be here for way too long. But when last we met, I had pretty much been cooped up inside my apartment, which, a little bit of backstory, in order to keep the temperature in here below 80 degrees while we were waiting for the annual change that the building makes. It's like a 50-year-old boiler system. So it either can be in heat, neutral, or cool. And so there's periods in the fall and the spring where they can change it from heat to neutral, but they can't turn on cool and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So in order to keep my apartment under 80 degrees, I basically had to keep my blackout curtains closed all day, every day. That meant that I never got sunlight unless I got out of the apartment, and I would bike up north about 20 to 30 minutes to see my best friend and her daughter. We would play around in the park. We would write and exchange letters and art for one another. Or I trained myself on an indoor kinetic trainer to be able to bike longer distances, so I could bike the hour to an hour and a half south to a neighborhood here called Hyde Park to see another dear friend of mine. I also redecorated my living room to feature what I called the Wall of Love. So rather than just having fun decorations, all the people, all the laughter, all the love that I was missing and craving, I really tried to represent as best I could with photographs in this one corner of my living room. Well, shortly after the last episode aired, as luck would have it, as an act of God or nature, whatever you want to call it, Chicago was forecast to have unseasonably warm weather for a week, so the building was forced to switch the boilers over to cool air earlier than they expected. And so for the first time in 6 months, I was able to fling the curtains open, and I really felt like a butterfly leaving the chrysalis, finally ready to open her wings. I was, at that point, just so hungry for life, for experience, for memorable memories, for people, for pointless conversations, for all of it. And so I did. I flung myself into one of the most fun and insanely expensive summers that I can ever remember having. And I didn't really care about that. I knew I needed to do this, and so I was willing to do whatever it took to make it happen. I joined a social club. We would go out for dinners. We went skydiving, paddleboarding, hang gliding, painting. We went to museums. We volunteered at food depositories. We shot pool at billiards night, went to mini golf. And one of the last events I did with that club is we went to flying trapeze out at a beach by us, but Foster Beach. Now, I met all kinds of new people over that summer. I had all the adventures, and I made so many memorable memories. Some of these memories were really, really good, and a few of them were really heartbreaking. And all this while, I'd made that promise to start doing emotional push-ups. So in the backdrop, I was finally learning how to heal some of my past trauma. And if any of you have done that work, you know how messy it can be. In order to feel what it really truly feels like to be whole and enough, you've got to go deep into the shadow work and kick up all kinds of emotional dust, and you find things you thought you had resolved, maybe you hadn't resolved, and you really had to take a fresh look at them. So all of this was going on. One of the best discoveries I made was joining the community at Trapeze School of New York in Chicago and starting to take flying trapeze lessons. I was terrified. I was even more terrified my first class than I had been going skydiving. In skydiving, if you're doing a jump that's tandem, it's almost like, you know, someone else is kind of doing the work. You just kind of have to agree to go along with them. But that's not so in trapeze. There's nobody else climbing this 24-foot ladder. There's nobody else who's leaning out over the edge of a super wobbly platform to grab onto this really thin bar and then, you know, jumping. And what was really interesting to me is that at the end of class, I thought, well, I'm really glad I did that, but I'll never do it again. And before I knew it, my feet had led me into the office to sign up for my next class before my head could get me back on my bike to go home. And here I am a year and a half later, and I'm still taking those classes, and it's really quite beautiful. So the tangible things that I can share that I've learned, you can watch them, you can see them. They're visible on Reels on my Instagram and Facebook pages. Getting to learn a whole slew of aerial tricks. Speaking of which, when I go back and I watch the video of my first day at trapeze, if you zoom in on my face, I don't look like someone who's about to do something circus related. I look like I am about to go into battle. The amount of focus and seriousness is just so there. Anyway, I digress. So these cool things that are tangible are, you know, the tricks you get to learn, eventually how to swing yourself. And in the process, I've gained enough physical strength that I actually can now do unassisted body weight pull-ups. And that was a dream of mine, like as a little girl, and I never thought I could do them. You know, I grew up in a school where we were told as girls, like, we didn't have the upper body strength to do them. So you better believe the first day I was able to do one, I was over the moon and shouting like a crazy person. It was delightful. But as cool as all of that is, it's nothing compared to the not tangible parts, the people that I've met, the bond that's really inherent in this community, the empowerment that's really shared from doing this activity together. One thing that's really cool about it is, like, you have this structured way to practice dealing with fear. You have this ability to meet yourself and your fear and your doubts and to work with them as you push, or in this case, fly above them. It's too much to try to explain in one episode, but I'll leave it there. I'll just close by saying I never thought in a million years that at 40 I would be joining a circus. But, you know, I wouldn't have it any other way. So this season, this season's theme that will kind of use as a lens will be all about what these changes look like and how we can, or other people have, or I have, or imagine someone could meet uncertainty with a sense of adventure and empowerment. I no longer lie to myself. I break free from the past with understanding and gratitude for all it has taught me, and I take responsibility for my life. If I had to summarize what the last 2 years have been for me without detail, I think that does it. As Matthew Hussey, who's a coach I absolutely love, said in a retreat last year, this retreat was about unconditional confidence, life is a circle. You just have to find a way in. And so as we transition into tonight's reading, I did want to also mention a few of the really transformational books I've been reading over this period. That's kind of a tradition in this podcast. I end up talking about things that I'm reading and sound like a total dork, and I don't care at all. So these are shared in no particular order other than this is the order that I found them, or I guess really it's the order that they found me. So they are How to Do the Work by Dr. Nicole LaPera, The next one was Trust Yourself by Melody Wilding. The Earned Life, Lose Regret, Choose Fulfillment by Marshall Goldsmith. The Artist's Way by Julia Cameron. The Highly Sensitive Person by Dr. Elaine Aron. Atomic Habits by James Clear. And finally, Find Your Cosmic Calling by Natalie Wallstein. I really do feel like when we stay open, as hard as that is, when we stay open, these beautiful nuggets find their way to us. They're like petals of a dandelion that are answering a wish. And so now, speaking of which, for tonight's reading, sorting through over 5,000 emails of Gmail junk to find the golden nuggets of wisdom. Newsletter on LinkedIn, Reinventing Life, Exploring Body, Mind, Spirit. Deepak Chopra, MD, Official, the founder at Deepak Chopra. Is There Enlightenment for Everyone? By Deepak Chopra. Most people look upon enlightenment, whatever the term means to them, as remote, exotic, and unattainable without extreme effort. Enlightenment is the state of a Tibetan Buddhist monk. Enlightenment is the state a Tibetan Buddhist monk may reach after decades of meditation or a yogi performing esoteric practices in a cave in the Himalayas. Yet, if you strip away the Eastern esoteric context that has become attached to the word enlightenment, whatever it is, must be a state of awareness. You can't be enlightened and not know it. Or, if you don't know it, you must have slipped into the state of awareness very, very gradually. The normal states of awareness are waking, dreaming, and deep sleep. They have in common that they are natural phenomena that require no self-awareness. Enlightenment is different in that you consciously attain it through whatever practice you choose. Because it has been considered subjective, any form of expanded self-awareness has been looked upon with suspicion in the West, which overlooks the fact that all kinds of states are subjective, such as being in pain or in love, feeling satisfied or curious, wanting to succeed, and so on. Our inner life is real, but each of us relates to it in a different way. Your inner life determines if you are creative or not, empathetic or not, insightful or not, and many other things, such as being happy, fulfilled, loving, depressed, anxious, etc. But enlightenment seems to be impersonal. No matter what kind of mental life you have, when you experience an enlightened state, you enter a spectrum of self-awareness that isn't just one thing, but it does have common features, like the symptoms of catching a cold. These features include the following. Emotions even out with fewer highs and lows. One feels a sense of detachment that isn't involved in life's everyday drama. The body feels lighter and perhaps disembodied. Thoughts are fewer and tend to relate to the situation at hand. There's far less dwelling on the past or in anticipating the future. More variable but also present are enhanced qualities. Qualities of awareness, such as becoming more blissful, more loving, more creative, insightful, self-confident, independent, and unswayed by outside forces. In one way or another, these features appear in everyday life. They just happen to be temporary and occasional. The fact that anyone can recognize, at least a little, what expanded self-awareness is like tells us two things. One, the enlightened state is normal and natural rather than exotic and eccentric. Two, it can be learned. These two insights are quite contemporary. The ancient wisdom traditions tend to set enlightenment apart from everyday existence. In India, for example, serious spiritual pursuits are saved for the end of life after a person has raised a family and retired. Yet much of this sequestering was due to simple functional realities. In the ancient world, survival was difficult, disease common, and social forces repressive. Expanded awareness is a form of personal freedom, which is very hard to attain if you led an ordinary life without the time and space to look inward. But it was never denied that enlightenment belonged to everybody. It was an open possibility, the only requirement being that you were aware enough to desire more awareness, which isn't true of every person, even today. In short, reaching enlightenment involves conscious evolution. Like any other skill that builds upon a basic mental function, like higher mathematics or learning three foreign languages, awareness has its own skill set. The primary skills are focus, attention span, and intention. We all possess these skills in rudimentary form, and any time we want, we can become more skillful, to the point of mastery. Swamis who can change their body temperature or endure extreme cold or bring their breathing almost to the point of cessation are doing these things in awareness. Intense focus, sustained attention, and strong intention don't simply belong to swamis and yogis. You also need them to graduate from law or medical school, for example. Yet along the spectrum of expanded awareness, when you get past all the changes just cited, a sort of ultimate question arises. What is awareness itself? To make ice, you put water in the freezer. To produce steam, you subject water to high heat. It's observable that water is the basis for these transformations. Yet as our minds undergo all kinds of transformations in thought, feelings, sensations, moods, etc., it's not obvious at all what awareness is like before it gets manipulated. In the state of enlightenment, you have no more doubts on this issue. You know pure awareness as a personal experience. This gives rise to a path of personal evolution known as the direct path. The direct path holds that pure awareness is with us all the time. It's not a learned state, a philosophy, a skill, or anything extraordinary. When the mind is at rest, and a person exists in a simple, undisturbed state, the experience comes close to being pure awareness. Instead of being transformed into thoughts, feelings, sensations, etc., your awareness simply is. Then what? Then you are self-aware without complication. By definition, the first thing awareness can be aware of is itself. To be aware of a chair, you have to look outward. To be aware of feeling happy, you have to look inward. But to be aware that you exist in this moment, no movement in or out is required. The direct path, therefore, offers a form of instant enlightenment. Right this minute, you know that you are aware without the need to be aware of something in here or out there. This recognition of the ground state of mind isn't immediately transformative. Having identified with mental activity for all of your life, it takes a major shift to identify with silent mind. If you become fascinated by the state of pure awareness, over time, it does bring transformation. You start to experience changes along the spectrum of enlightenment. The symptoms start to show up. But the direct path is valuable in and of itself. By pointing out that higher states of consciousness are hidden in plain sight, they are expansions of a normal, natural state. To know this without the trappings of religion, Eastern exoticism, and other biases have been one of the major achievements of modern spirituality, which can now be redefined as exploration of consciousness in all its infinite possibilities.